Hi, I'm Aaron Sarofsky.
And I'm Austin Shaw.
This is Between the Keyframes.
This week we're talking about mistakes.
Mistakes we've made, mistakes you'll likely make.
They're part of the process.
Unless they're really big mistakes. And then you get fired or sued or, you know.
Yeah, then they're not okay.
I already made a mistake in this podcast.
I forgot to switch my headphones.
All of this is unusable, by the way. This is an amazing start to our episode.
So, we've already made a couple of key mistakes this morning.
Mistakes.
Have we learned? I don't know.
No, we're going to do this every Friday.
Literally every single time I teach a class, every single time I'm like, okay, show me your work. And they're like, oh, you got to turn the share screen option on. I'm like, ugh. I told you the one where my students were like, they're like, your audio is going in and out. And I'm like, I don't understand. I have this Yeti mic. And then after class, I looked and I had unplugged it, the USB from the computer. So it wasn't plugged in.
Okay, so let's start over. This week's episode is about mistakes we've made. Austin, like when you and I talked about this topic, we immediately went to the stuff, the mistakes we made when we were youngins.
The junior days, yes.
You know, since we started kind of listing those out, I've also been thinking about mistakes I've made as a mentor, as a business owner. But I think, you know, from mistakes, we learn lessons. And, you know, we've been in working professionals for 20 years now. So perhaps I don't think we can help people avoid making their own mistakes, but at least we can make the sting of them be
right.
Provide a little context, you know, and if not, like maybe we should add a laugh track.
One of those early mistakes I think I made as a professor was that I thought I had to know everything, right? That if a student asked me a question, like I had to know the answer. And if I didn't, I felt very exposed, right? Like, you know, like there was something wrong. And it's like, well, first off, that's impossible because no one knows everything. Now though, but I think part of, I think maybe what's the value of our mistakes? You know, for me, it's about being able to, you know, if I can own them, then I can kind of grow from there. And once I started getting more comfortable with not knowing everything, it became kind of, it was a joy to be like, I don't know, like, but let's figure that out, right? And then either, you know, let's jump on Google and figure it out. Or let's ask the class, does anybody know? Or let's kind of crowdsource this, right?
What are some of the fun mistakes you made?
All right. As a junior? All right, so I'm going back to my intern days, one of my early internships, and I was at Curious Pictures in New York City, and I remember I was, I didn't really understand the hierarchy and how that all worked, right? And I would just kind of follow the creative director around while she was giving feedback to the compositors and the 3D artists, and I would just felt like, oh yeah, I'll weigh in, and I would just give my feedback too, as if I was sort of the co-creative director. Yeah, I remember there was one day this like compositor 3D guy just looked at me like he just wanted to kill me. You know what I mean? Like, and it was you know, but I just didn't really understand. And it's not even that like it wasn't like it was wrong what I was saying. It just wasn't the right place for me to just jump in, right?
Yeah.
In my role as intern. How about you? Yeah, let's hear it.
So I'm going to start with one that made me feel like an absolute just moron. And it's simple. And it was weird that I wasn't taught any of this in school, have to say. But I'm not blaming my professors. I don't even remember what the commercial was for, but it was 30 seconds at 30 frames per second. And I gave the render to the flame artist. And I don't know if you know, but flame artists, even still, no offense to any flame artists, but they're a little grouchy and confident.
Well, they like things done a very certain, right? There's a right way to do things.
Precision. They're finishing artists and they're flame artists. Yep. And And so I sent it to the flame, and I remember his like back to me, and it was a TIFF sequence. He goes, yeah, there's like only 894 frames in here.
Where's my six frames at?
Yeah. And I go, oh, can't you just like, it was like a still at the end.
Right.
And I was like, oh, well, you could just send that last frame. And he like kind of swings around in his chair. He goes, the clients pay for 900 frames. We give them 900 frames.
Right. You're like in the old west.
And I was like, you know, but like, and I was like, you know, like a kid, I was just out of, you know, grad school, which was like school, because I did one right after another, and I was still very young, and I was just like, oh my God, thinking like, is that really how precise it needs to be?
Oh, right,
and
right.
I was like, really? You can't just extend it? He goes, 900 frames. You give me 900 frames. Wow. And now I get it. Like, I wasn't as embarrassed as I should have been. I was just kind of like, this guy's a knucklehead.
Right.
But it's 900 frames. And there's so much of our work is creative, but there is an aspect of it that, from a delivery standpoint, is about precision.
Right.
And so I had no training on that side whatsoever. And I still struggle on that side. I very much, like, I'm more on the creative side. I tend to lose interest when it comes to that aspect.
Yeah,
of
the
it,
nitty gritty.
You have to pay attention.
Oh, yeah, it has to.
You have to set up your files, right? You have to have your specs. You have to have all that stuff. So that was like a really good mistake that still sits in my head.
That makes me think of another one I did when I was kind of early junior freelance. Do you remember UV Factory?
Yeah.
Do you remember that studio?
Yeah.
I was doing like some freelance with those guys, and I was doing some rotoscoping for some like NFL
project. Promo.
And I did a whole 3 second, which is, you know, when of a full action, you know, the guy diving for the ball, like the whole thing. And I did it at the wrong, I didn't fix the fields. I'm trying to remember when you had to like fix the fields. Right. So it was interlaced.
ABBA.
Yeah. And so basically I had to do the whole thing over. I had to go back and redo it from the start because I was at the wrong frame rate or interpolation.
Okay. Another mistake I made as a kid, also a DK. Yeah. Spent my years growing up at DK, so they get the benefit of all of my stupid ass mistakes. I was working on a Miller Lite commercial. I was setting all the type. And there were all these supers with lines kind of sliding in and out. It was very kind of frenetic and fun. And it shipped. It went out. It was approved by all the people. And the guy at Extreme Reach called the studio after it was delivered and was like, hey, so Miller Lite is spelled L-I-G-H-T, but it's L-I-T-E, like that's Miller Lite. And nobody caught it. This like one guy caught it.
And this is like the broadcast, like before.
Just right before it gets to the world, right? And so of course we fixed it right away, but it was interesting how that mistake was overlooked by so many people, including the client and the agency and internally. And I, of course, felt mortified because I have never been historically a good speller. So I ran everything through spell check, like everything. And it.
Right. And it spelled right.
It spelled correct, but not for that brand. And so it's just really important that you check your stuff against a script. Had that gone out, oh my God, I'm sure we would have heard about it. But it also means, like, take your job seriously. Obviously, this guy at Extreme Reach had nothing to gain or lose by calling us up. But that's why all that information's on the slate and all that stuff is going on. He's like, yeah, no, it's fine, but it's spelled wrong. Nobody caught it. And we were like, oh my God. So that's like a really big deal. Nobody internally caught it. Like, everybody has to be an advocate for getting things right. From the artists to the producers, everybody has to check things before it goes out.
And along those lines, I mean, this whole kind of precision thing, I think one of the big ones for me, and this is one I share with my students a lot, the importance of project organization and structure, right? So again, I'm back here. I'm at Curious Pictures still. I'm sort of making that transition between intern to freelancer, junior freelancer, and I get hired to be a junior animator on a project. I was working on the job, and at one point the lead compositor, she came and was like, listen, we got to talk about your After Effects project organization, which I had none, you know? And it was, again, I had the exposed feeling where, like, all of a sudden my face got hot and I felt like really embarrassed. But it was great because basically if you looked at my After Effects project window, it was just, you know, Illustrator file, footage file, comp, PSD, like no organization at all, just alphabetical order, right? And she sat with me for about 20 minutes and said, this is how I organize projects. And she's made a folder and it was like comps. And then she made another folder and she was like elements and then PSDs. And then this is where your pre-comps go. And this is how you should label everything. And it was, again, it was embarrassing for that moment, but it was I look back on that because it was such a gift because she didn't have to do that. She could have just been like, you know, imported my project file, cleaned it up herself and told the producer not to book me again because I didn't know how to keep my projects organized, right? But she sat there. Yeah,
and that could easily happen.
Yeah, she sat there. She taught me that. And since then, I've never been that lost in that arena. I get lost in other arenas, but in terms of project organization, it's become, and it's that lesson of just, you know, that's an employable skill. I try to tell that to my students. I'm like, right, if you can keep your files organized like that, and you are now becoming useful to a team. Whereas if you can't, you're just basically, maybe you're that really talented designer that everybody, like when you go home and they need to go and look at your files, they just are annoyed because they keep, you know, digging through, trying to figure out your weird system.
I will say we've had artists in to the studio and they've been just outright obstinate about saving things where things go. We have a very clear method at the studio. And, you know, whenever you're looking for something that they've done, it's like maybe they saved something locally. Maybe they've saved it on the server. Maybe they've saved it in the wrong fucking spot on the server, in the wrong job even. And you're just like, you sit them down, you talk to them about it. You say, hey, man, like, you gotta work like this. It's okay for it to take a little longer for you to get things done to stay organized. It is important to us. It is a priority to us that anybody can go into your files and work on them. It is important that things be archived properly. And the only way that that happens is if you work like this. This is essential to your job here. And then they just can't get it together. And you give them like the, hey, you're not welcome back. And it's not because of the work you do. It's because of the work you're not doing. And you're not taking it seriously, what we're telling you. So there's people that we will never have back in the studio because they just can't be organized. They cannot do it. And I don't know what that is. Like, I think it might be like genetic or something. Like, you just have to have a messy closet.
What's interesting. Yeah, because it's like, I feel like by nature, I'm not the most organized person, right? I just want to get in. I just want to make stuff. I just want to, like, you know, but what I've learned is that if I apply a little discipline and I put things where they're supposed to go, it actually makes me way more efficient because now I'm not searching. Okay. I'm not wasting energy trying to figure out where that file is. It's like, I don't even really have to think. I'm looking for a PSD file. I'm importing PSD into After Effects. Like, it's in the PSD folder, which is in the raster folder, which is in the because it always goes there. So it's does require a little discipline up front, but I think the payoff is big.
I think that like the bigger lesson I think here for our perhaps younger audience is that there are aspects to your job that you're going to be good at and it's going to come naturally, and there are aspects to your job that is going to be a little bit more challenging. But you got to attack those challenging things. You have to hit them head on and you have to allow them to become part of your process, because those things you might not think are important. You might think your talent or your skill is the most important thing and that will carry you through. But I assure you, it will not.
Right.
If you are not collaborative, if you cannot save files correctly, it will make you unemployable.
Right, right.
with absolute certainty, I say that. I think about like my 24-year-old self, Erin, you know, being at Digital Kitchen, and to a certain extent, I lacked self-awareness. Like, so I would say that this is a mistake, but I think a big mistake that a lot of people make, you know, you think because you're 24 and talented and winning a lot and doing great work that you have some kind of context for the bigger picture that's really important for your employer to understand, that your point of view is so unique and so important that you will share and overshare and be aggressive about sharing, which are things that I've done in my career, without realization or understanding or even thinking for a moment about what management might be going through. I mean, if you're a large studio doing $10, $20 million a year business, I can assure you the last thing you are interested, your boss is interested in hearing from is you about some slight process thing. It doesn't mean that it's not important, but maybe you should take it to your creative director or your producer. Maybe you should understand that it might take a little time to work it. That doesn't mean you should be abused or treated improperly or anything like that. There are many reasons why you would want to talk to management right away. But like basic stuff that affects you on a day-to-day basis, like you got to think contextually about like where you fit into whole thing here.
Right.
Big picture. And even if you go to management saying like, hey, I understand there's other stuff going on. You run a big company. This isn't going to be like the top of your list. Can you take some time to talk to me about this when you free up? That's a whole different avenue than storing in somebody's office or having a fucking meltdown in the studio over something that is like, you know, it's really important to have some context to like where you fit into the structure of things. It doesn't mean you're not important. It just means like there's other stuff going on.
Right. The hierarchy of needs. Right. Yeah.
Yeah. So I would say that's another lesson that I learned probably the hard way, and something that some people only time can teach them.
Right.
Okay. Any other bigger picture lessons that you have written down?
So going back to something you said earlier, it was about facing some of those challenges, the things you're not naturally good at, and maybe you have to work harder at them. And the idea that if you don't, then you're sort of setting yourself, you're cutting yourself off from potentials. So I have a lot of students who might be like, you know, oh, I'm not a good writer, right? So I don't want to write a concept statement for my thing, or I'm just not good at it.
That's a good mistake.
Right? And it's like, well, then I guess you're not going to become a creative lead. Right? Because it's like, maybe you don't, if you don't work on that skill set, then you're going to be an awesome designer, but you're always going to pass those frames off and someone else is going to write up the description.
And somebody else is going to lead the jobs because that's a basic form of communication, which actually is a great segue into my next mistake. And this is a big one as a creative director, as a studio owner. So one mistake I made a couple times now is when you have an employee that you love, they do a good job at what they do. They lack certain skills that allow them to like level up, maybe from like a senior creative lead into a true creative director position. They maybe can manage resources well. And you want so badly to be able to pay them more. You want so badly for them to level up in their career, but they really don't have that skill set. And they're not, even though you've talked to them about it, they're not necessarily working on those things, like writing, like doing certain things. So you have to stop and say, no, like you're as far as you're going to get we can pay you more, like if you want a raise because you're performing exceptionally well, but you are not going to be a creative director because you lack these.
And you can't do that for them.
Because you cannot write. No. And that's the lesson. That is the lesson. Because I have promoted people outside of where their natural skills lie, and it always crashes and burns. You cannot put somebody in front of a client that gets nervous and fumbles when they're talking to a client. You cannot make somebody a creative director and ask them to put decks together and write up concepts when they can't put an email, like a sentence and an email together that makes
sense. Now, do you give them the chance? You know, so somebody who's fumbling in front of the client, right? That's going to happen your first few times, you know,
right,
and you got to, you know, eventually push through that. But,
Well, the point is you don't promote somebody into that role and give them all of this responsibility when they're not ready. When they haven't proven that they're ready.
Yeah, demonstrated willingness to do the work in the area that they need to improve. Yeah.
Exactly. It's terrible. And so what they do is they quit, or you have to fire them. And you've lost this amazing senior artist who was so good at what they did and took them out of their element and put them in a different role. And like, you've really just, nobody wins in that situation. And you really have to, as an owner, as somebody that understands what's really necessary for those kind of level up moments, to say like, hey, if you want to do that, you're going to do that somewhere else, because you have not shown the skill set required. Well, another mistake slash lesson I've made. I'm sounding like a really...
But that's what being a junior, right?
That is. I was very talented, people. Yeah, you're learning a lot. And so a lot of what I'm talking about now is soft skills, right? Like having nothing to do with my talent and my design. This is all stuff I've learned along the way. And I think this is the last one I'll get into, but it's probably like the most important thing from a cultural perspective, and maybe even a life lesson. It's about gossip. You gotta know.
Don't do it.
The difference between toxic gossip and healthy gossip. Healthy gossip is gonna happen. You're gonna talk about, oh, so and so did this. Have you seen that? But you gotta sense when it's turning toxic, and be like, no. I don't talk about people like that. That's none of my business. Once you get roped into that, whether you're initiating it or you're not initiating it, like, because I don't even know where I would have fallen in that spectrum. I was certainly one of the younger people, so I don't know that I knew what was exactly happening around me. But you gotta be aware of when you're talking shit and when you're stirring shit.
Right.
You can't do it. You just gotta avoid it. There is a difference between like work and personal and all of that, and you have to find that line. You have to not engage.
Well, because you're a part of a culture, and if you're you're adding toxicity to that culture, that's gonna hurt the whole system.
The whole thing.
Right.
And it is something I try to be aware of in my own studio, because if things feel a little weird, you're like, what's going on? And it could be that we're just on a hard job, and it's going to be like that for another week, and you just say, everybody just grind through it. We'll do something nice on the other side. And that's kind of, you get like the culture vibe there. But then sometimes something starts happening and you can't quite figure out what's going on.
And you know that there's
someone or people
are talking
shit about each other, about whatever. And, you know, it's always a person or two just being toxic, being absolutely fucking toxic. And that, again, is not tolerated anymore. That is like, hey, what's going on with you? Why are you talking about people?
Yeah.
None of your business what's going on with this person in their career. You know, if anything's affecting you in your work, you got to talk to us about it. You don't talk to every single person at the studio with your grievances. You come to management and say, like, this is going on. How do I deal with it? Like, or you just mind your own fucking business.
Right. Probably good, you know, attitude in life.
Yeah.
Mind your business. Mind your own business. I have one more that's sort of in this whole realm too.
Yep.
It's that kind of reputation, right? That
and
I remember one more when I was a junior, I was on a project and I was just too high maintenance with the producer, right? Just too much checking in and how does this look and how's this and how's this? And this is before I really understood that, you know, I mean, the producers, especially as a freelancer, right? Like, you want the you want the producers to love you, right? Because they're the ones who are booking you. They're the ones who are booking you. And I was just, you know, on this project, I was just too high maintenance. And the producer, like, and I could, you know, afterwards looking back, realizing it that, like, you know, there's a certain line where you just got to, you know, learning that where you got to just kind of, you show the work, you chill, you wait for feedback, right?
And, yeah, and, you got to know when you're being super fucking annoying.
Yeah, exactly. And I had to learn that
lesson.
Sometimes
people won't tell you. Yeah, no, they won't tell you.
They just won't call you again, you know? And it's one of those, I feel embarrassed even still talking about it now, you know? And that's, you know, that's a lot of years ago. And it's like, I'm not this super needy, high maintenance artist anymore. But that I needed to make that mistake there to become the cool, calm, and collected. But for real, to kind of learn how to just communicate in a way that is helpful to that whole process. And maybe too many questions, too much help
just
me.
Take it down a notch. Yeah. So I have a thought on that because I run into that in my studio over the years. And even at Superfed when I was a creative director there. As a creative director, I have a team of designers and artists and animators. My job is to talk to them about what the problems are and give seeds of inspiration for what to do to fix it. But their job is to solve the problem creatively, visually, all of that. So I don't like when an artist sends me work every 2 seconds and basically I have to give them a frame by frame or scooch this over here, scooch that over there. I just want to say, hey, the brand isn't visible enough. And then them come back and say, okay, well, I made the logo bigger. Okay, that's novel. Okay, well, I made the background less busy. I brought more of the brand colors in. Instead of making the logo large, I started out bigger and it settles back into place. Okay, that's a cool way of doing it. And they start solving the problem. That's what I want. But when somebody's pinging me every 2 seconds, especially in work from home, it's like, what am I paying you for? Fucking figure it out. Like, I gave you the problem. I gave you some avenues to try. Try it and show me some stuff in a couple hours. To your point, like, if I'm doing your job, I'm not doing my job, you know? So there is a sweet spot of learning where that is to, you know, communicate enough, have the information you need, be able to work making forward progress, but also, like, not being annoying.
And of course the other side too, like you said, where, you know, don't not communicate at all, right? Don't
ask the question, that's the worst.
Right? Like I've always, you know.
There's the whole other side, you're totally right.
Where it's like,
right.
You know, whenever I get on a call with a client, I usually have a checklist of specs, right? Like duration, size, how many aspect ratios. Like I have a whole little checklist of the specifications, the technical, to know that I've got that information. Because without that, it's really inefficient for me to start, right?
And then you're right. The checking in is essential because we're talking about like your mistake.
Yeah, over,
of just
too much.
Checking in so often, it's annoying, right? It's just like, God, give me a fucking break here. But the other side is true too. And that's not really a mistake I don't think I have either. Personally,
I've heard stories about just the like, where's my.
What have you been doing?
Right,
for
where's
two
my
fucking
render?
Days?
Like, we have a deadline. Where is it? It's like, oops. Like, yeah. Yeah. I think another one. Now they're all coming back. PTSD. Woo. Just saying yes to everything, right? Like literally, I had to have someone tell me, a more senior artist, to just be like, you know, you don't have to even answer yes or no in that moment. You could just say, I need a little time to think about it before you say yes. Even if you know you want to say yes, just say, you know what, let me take all this information, let me look at it, let me look it over, and then I will get back to you. And that's a legitimate answer. But I remember just every time someone called me up, we have this thing, we want you to work. Okay, yes. Wait, we haven't even told you how much we're paying you. And it was just, I just felt almost this obligation to say yes to everything. And you don't have to. I've noticed this whole time the sun is blasting me. I had the golden beard.
Well, my storage disk is almost full, so I guess have to wrap up soon.
All right.
Another mistake I made was not plugging in my external hard drive and identifying that as a
mistake. The mistakes, they never end. They never end. We don't want them to, because if they did, then, you know, I think, you know, now we can get a little bit philosophical, but that is sort of, right? Like, we are imperfect as we walk through.
Yeah. Okay. So.
Yeah.
So that's cool. We just talked about a whole bunch of mistakes we made and/or watched other people make. We've also asked some of our friends to contribute some of their stories about mistakes. So, have a listen to a couple of those right now.
I think the biggest mistake I made as a junior is probably the same mistake most people make, which is focusing way too much on learning the software and the tricks that other artists are using and not focusing enough on the fundamentals like design and animation.
The biggest mistake I made as a junior was probably the times I would let my own ambition to try out some sort of new technique or look in a project take over instead of actually looking at what the story of the project would dictate.
I skipped a lot of meals and I deprived myself of a lot of sleep, and it wasn't necessary.
The biggest mistake I made as a junior was probably consistently not watching over renders. I have this tendency that when I finish something, I just want to get it out and like show it to everybody right away. And that usually makes me miss a lot of details that I should see if I actually take my time and look at them closely. And that's definitely cost a bunch of free renders, which in some cases I may take quite a lot of time.
The biggest mistake I ever made as a junior is kind of funny. I actually pulled down all of Imaginary Forces LA's server. I tried to rename, I think, like 300,000 render files all at once with Adobe Bridge's naming tool. Don't do that, especially if you have an Isilon server. It didn't like it. I thought I was being really smart. I selected everything, renamed it, walked away for lunch, came back, and no one was there. It was totally gone, except for me and the IT guy. So it wasn't really my fault because it should have worked, but don't try it. Don't try that at home.
I guess, like, for to wrap this episode up, I just want to say thank you for listening to our mistakes. We hope they help you make not as many or recover from the mistakes that you made. And
it's part of the process. It really
totally
is. It's part of the process.
Totally. And thank you, Austin, for being my co-host.
Thank you, Erin.
Oh, we're doing the beat.
Until next time.
So until next time, as I knock the camera around, I see it like wiggling. We're going to get this under control. We're going to have this all figured out.
We're going to make a lot of mistakes.
A lot of
mistakes.
We're
going to learn.
We're going
to
learn
from at least some of them.
Okay. Thank you, Austin. Okay. Thank you, everybody.
Bye.
Okay. Bye.